idea of... of people who Jesus met tonight. Our brother Paul, by the way, is going to take Herod. And he's asked that we read the first 11 verses of Matthew chapter 14. Matthew 14. At that time Herod the Tetrarch heard of the fame of Jesus. And he said unto his servants, This is John the Baptist. He is risen from the dead, and therefore mighty works do show forth themselves in him. For Herod had laid hold of John, and bound him, and put him in prison for Herodias' sake, his brother Philip's wife. For John said unto him, It is not lawful for thee to have her. And when he would have put him to death, he feared the multitude, because they counted him as a prophet. But when Herod's birthday was kept, the daughter Herodias danced before him, for them, and pleased Herod. Whereupon he promised with an oath to give her whatever she would ask. And she, being before instructed of her mother, said, Give me here John the Baptist's head in a charger. And the king was sorry, nevertheless, for the oath's sake, and for them that sat with him at meat, he commanded it to be given her. And he sent and beheaded John in the prison, and his head was brought in a charger and given to the damsel, and she brought it to her mother. With those few words of introduction, we now look to Brother Paul.
Good evening, brethren and sisters. I assume that the speaker scared away the crowds, so apologies. They obviously know something that you lot don't. So, you're stuck with me this evening. And we're going to be studying Herod. And I've got it written up as the history of the Herods. And we're going to plot them historically with what we have written for us in the Bible, and hopefully I'll be able to paint a bit of a picture of what the Herods were like, and what the time of like Jesus was like under the rule of these people. So, which Herod? Now, confusingly, there are several. I think you can work it out at five or six different people called Herod throughout scripture, which when I took the subject on, I thought it was only two. So finding out that there could be six, which we could feasibly talk about, made the subject a little bit bigger for me to look at. But we are actually going to only look at two of them, because there's only two, I believe, which actually have an impact or have a meeting with Jesus throughout his life. So this is, I don't know how well that's coming up. I don't know how easy that is to see. For some reason, the screen seems to be a little bit smaller than I anticipated. So some of the stuff may look a little bit smaller than I hoped, but I'll just talk through the slides anyway. So we've got here Herod's family tree, and you've got Herod the Great right at the top, who's going to be the first one that we look at, and then you've got his sons, Herod Antipas, Herod Archelaus, Herod Philip, and then Philip the Tetrarch. Then you've got various grandchildren, King Herod Agrippa. Then you've got great-grandchildren, and King Herod Agrippa II. Can you understand why I suddenly realized that this was a bit more complicated than I thought it was going to be? But I think, we're going to look at Herod the Great and then Herod Antipas, who is also known as Herod the Tetrarch. So we're going to look at Herod the Great and his son as well. So if we were just using scripture, it would be very difficult if we were looking at this timeline to work out which Herod we were talking about. But secular history, history written down by people like Josephus and stuff, makes it a lot easier to work out which Herod is being talked about at the time. And there's a fair bit of information noted about all of these people called Herod. Then it allows us to sort of like work out better what these people were like. And they were very, very interesting people. So we're going to look at Herod the Great to start with. He didn't really have any immediate contact as such with Jesus, but he did have an impact on Jesus' life. So I thought it was worth looking at him because obviously if we look at the start of Matthew, we see that there is a bit of an interaction there, even though they don't actually meet. So who was this Herod? Herod the Great was born around 73 to 71 BC, and he was a descendant from the Edomites. He became governor of Galilee in 47 BC, and he was appointed to this position by his father, Antipater the Idumean. I hope I've said that right. And he was also then given the title of Tetrarch, essentially governor or ruler of a quarter, by the Roman leader Mark Antony. And in 39 BC, he was named as King of the Jews, interestingly, by the Roman Senate. And as soon as he was given this title, he immediately was rebelled against by the then ruler of the area and his nephew, Hyrcanus II. That was the ruler of the time of the area that he was named king of, and his nephew called Antigonus. There's a lot of names in this. It's going to be a bit difficult for me to pronounce, so bear with me. And the Roman leaders decided to give him extra support because this rebellion had taken Jerusalem out of the Roman hands. So they decided that after the general Pompey had conquered Jerusalem and then it had fallen out of their hands, they didn't want to lose the influence that they had in the area by controlling Jerusalem. So they decided to help out Herod the Great. And they sieged Jerusalem for 3 years and eventually took it. And Herod had the nephew of the king sent away to Mark Antony. So he sent the nephew to be executed. So he sent him away to Mark Antony to lose his life. And we see that this is quite a theme of this man. And it was at this point that Herod appointed himself, with the backing of the Roman Senate, as the sole ruler of Judea. And he reigned for 34 years from Jerusalem. And Herod placed his unwavering support for the Roman Empire, which allowed him to stay in power for so long. So throughout this time, there's quite a few Caesars from what I can work out. But Herod always stays in power because he always pledged his allegiance to the rulers of the Roman Empire. And he was an extravagant man. He had many building projects which he undertook whilst he was on the throne. And some of these continued after his death. He created the fortress of Masada, which is here, built on the top of a mountain. I don't think they actually know how he was able to build this fortress on top of here. There's the main fort, and then I think this bit down here was his sort of like holiday home, but phenomenally difficult to take if you were attacking it, with the fact that it's situated on the top of a mountain and there's not many ways to get up to it. And funnily enough, I think the Jewish rebellion in AD 70 onwards was finally crushed at this place. So that gives an idea of how difficult it was and how strategically impressive this building was. A massive undertaking. As I said, he was a very extravagant man. And he also built a fortress called Herodium, probably named after himself, because I think that's what he liked to do. It was built on the top of a hill, and this is an artist's impression of what they believe it looked like. I mean, extravagant, an outpouring of his wealth, which he liked to show off. He was regularly giving sort of like tributes and gifts to the Romans, and he was burning through his country's finances very quickly. So he had a massive amount of taxation on the people, but they didn't mind that. He also used pioneering technology, I guess we'd call it, to reinforce the harbour at Caesarea. So he used what they called sort of like underwater concrete to reinforce this harbour. So we've got here, you can't see it very well on this picture, but we've got the outlines of what used to be a harbour, and all of this is what Herod like had a hand in putting together. The amount of granite and stuff that he used, they estimate would have taken about 400 ships to transport to the area from different places, which is what he used to build this harbour. And we've got here a sort of like aerial photograph of the area, and you can see this bit here. They believe that this is the remains of the work that Herod did and his men to reinforce and make this harbour very, very strong and difficult to get into. Now, I said that he taxed the Jews very heavily. The reason why they didn't mind is that he decided that he was going to build them a new temple. Enormous temple. Much bigger than the temple that Solomon had built. Much, much bigger than the temple which the exiles built when they came back to Jerusalem. So even though he taxed the Jews a lot, they didn't really mind that much, which is quite strange because they saw him doing a service for them. And we've still got the remains of the Temple Mount in Jerusalem now, which is what Herod the Great built. So, and I think the size of it is massive, like this temple complex. And he supported the Jews, actually, when it suited him, but he also upset them quite a lot as well. And I think if you look into history, you can find that when he was building this temple, he put a giant golden eagle on top of one of the doorways. And the eagle was a symbol of Rome, and that upset the Jews quite a lot. And I think gradually throughout his life, he was starting to upset and annoy the Jews more and more, and there were quite a lot of revolts towards the end of his life. And, you know, this temple took, I think, a very long time to build. It started when he was alive, and it was still being finished, I believe, when Jesus was put to death. So, you know, I think 46 years is what one of the verses in scripture says. So he was an extravagant person, but he wasn't a very nice person. He enjoyed executing people and putting people to death. And history tells us that they believe he was a pioneer of the secret police. So he used to get groups of men to go out into the city to make sure that nobody was saying anything bad about him. He was quite paranoid, which is why he used to send a lot of gifts to the Romans to keep them on his side. And yeah, as I said, he was a fairly bloodthirsty person. And this table is a list of all of his wives and his children. And if we can see at the top here, we've got Antipater, Alexander, Aristobulus. He got it into his head that they were all trying to finish him off so that they could take over his throne. So he had them executed. He also had his second wife executed as well. So not a very nice person to be around, I don't think. And that's all the ones that we know of. Who knows how many extra people he got through. And if we look at the bottom, he also married a cousin and a niece. A very, very interesting person to have on the throne at the time. And towards the end of Herod the Great's reign, Jesus was born. Can we turn to Matthew chapter 2, please? Matthew chapter 2, verses 1 to 3. Now, I'm not going to read them out just yet. Imagine you're Herod at this time. You have a comfortable life as the king of the Jews. You have the backing of the Roman emperors and the Senate and the Roman armies. You have a mighty temple which is being constructed to keep the troublesome Jews happy, and many other building projects underway. You've already finished off your competition, so there's nobody trying to take your throne off you, and you are technically king of the Jews. And then this happens. Where is he that is born king of the Jews? For we have seen his star in the east and are come to worship him. Matthew chapter 2, verse 2. You can imagine him being like, king of the Jews, that's me. And then you can imagine his annoyance or anger when it becomes apparent that you are not the person that they are looking for. So now you see that there's a threat. There's a new king of the Jews, which you know nothing about. And the record tells us that he goes to the chief priests and the scribes, and he demands to know where Jesus has been born, where the king of the Jews is. And they tell him that he is in Bethlehem. And Herod goes and tells the wise men, the Magi, that when they find him, to come back to him, to tell him where he is, so that Herod can go and give a sacrifice to him, I think. Yeah, worship him. But they don't do that. But I think it's interesting that Herod believes what the chief priests and the scribes tell him. You know, there's sort of that want for him to sort of like, you know, he was king of the Jews at the end of the day, but I think it was more to do with the fact that he wanted to find this new king. And he gets tricked, doesn't he, by the wise men. They go by a different route, and Joseph moves Jesus and his mother down to Egypt. And what does Herod do when he realizes he's been tricked? Well, you know, in keeping with what we know of Herod, he massacres all of the children under the age of 2. And that is a horrible thing to do. I mean, what kind of person do you have to be to do this kind of thing? And historians call this incident the Massacre of the Innocents, which is a very dark name. Interestingly, no other religious text or secular piece of history that I can find, or that you can search for on the internet, holds any information about this incident, which I thought was very interesting. But people sort of like go along the thought that if there won't have been that many children. They believe. They don't think there will have been that many children under the age of 2 in Bethlehem and the surrounding area. So they don't think that it was recorded for that. However, a lot of historians agree that this incident did happen, as it fits in with the character of the Herod which we are discussing at the moment. So Herod dies whilst Jesus is in Egypt. God told Joseph to move Jesus in Matthew chapter 2 verse 13. That he was told that Herod was going to seek Jesus to destroy him. But Herod doesn't fulfill that task, does he? And not long after this, he dies. And his son, Herod Archelaus, reigns in his stead. We're not going to talk about this Herod very much. We're not given very much information on him. And this is where it definitely becomes a lot more difficult to work out which Herod we are talking about. But the internet is a wonderful thing, and I found this family tree, which made it a lot easier for me personally to understand the sort of like which person we are talking about. So we've got Herod the Great at the top, then we've got Archelaus, which we've just mentioned. Joseph heard when he was on his way back into Israel that Archelaus was on the throne and was worried by this, so he went to Nazareth. Archelaus tried to do the same thing as his father, tried to bottle up the Romans, wasn't quite as good at that as his father was, and fell out of favour with the Roman Empire and was removed. And his brother, Herod Antipas, becomes the ruler of the area. And I think this is definitely right, that we're now talking about the right Herod. If we sort of like look at the timelines, Archelaus died in 6 AD, Herod Antipas died in 39 AD. So I believe this is the one which we're going to talk about throughout the rest of the Gospels. And this is an artist's impression of the Herod which we are talking about. Don't know how true that is, but it's certainly got a scheming look about him, bit of a mischievous sort of like air to him, sort of like, I will do anything I can to stay in power. And he was given the title of Tetrarch, much like his father, ruling over a quarter of his father's kingdom. And if we go back to the family tree, the Romans divided the area of Judea into four different parts. And I've got a map of the areas which he would have been in control of. So the green one was Herod Archelaus, who we've just talked about, who didn't last very long. The purple colour is Herod Antipas, who we're going to spend the rest of the time talking about. Green is light green, nope. Orange is the other Herod. And then there's a grey area where one of Herod's daughters was given sort of like an area of the land to be in control of, interestingly, because they weren't very favourable to women, the Romans. So for her to get this sort of like area was unheard of. So the purple bits are the bit which Herod Antipas was in control of. Very much like his father, he was a keen builder. He built a city and named it Tiberias after the Emperor Tiberius, so buttering up the Romans to keep them on his good side. We've got a map here. Tiberias is on the coast of the Sea of Galilee, and I think it's referred to as the Sea of Tiberias at some points as well in Scripture. And he also fortified the city here, Sepphoris, I think that's how you say it. So he was very much like his father, and he wanted to fortify his areas and make his cities look good. And he had a much more active part to play in Jesus' life than his father did. His father tried to kill him. Herod was part and parcel of killing him, I believe. So our reading was taken from Matthew chapter 14. Sorry, my voice is going. I'll just take a drink. And I think just from reading this bit of scripture, we can work out what kind of a man this Herod was. He'd put John the Baptist in prison because John wasn't very happy about the fact that he married his brother's wife whilst, so his wife divorced his brother and then he got married to her. And John the Baptist was telling him off about this and said, it's not lawful for you to have her. And Herod doesn't like that, so he puts him in jail. But he didn't put John the Baptist to death at this point. If we turn to Mark chapter 6 as well, we get a bit more information about sort of like there's almost a kind of reverence in it that Herod has for John the Baptist. If we look at Mark chapter 6 verse 20, for Herod feared John, knowing that he was a just man and holy, and observed him. And when he heard him, he did many things and heard him gladly. So John the Baptist was the person who was able to, I believe, get the best out of Herod the Tetrarch. But his niece, Salome, I think, does a dance for Herod on his birthday. And she asks, he promises to give her anything up to half of the kingdom, which is very interesting because we've just done a study of Esther at Sunday school, Sunday study group, and Artaxerxes, I think, promises Esther the same kind of thing. So maybe Herod the Tetrarch was modeling himself on Artaxerxes. But as we've seen from the map here, he didn't really have that much to give away, unlike Artaxerxes, who had hundreds of thousands of different territories. Herod was not quite that influential, but he promises to give her whatever she wants, and she asks for the head of John the Baptist. Now, in Mark chapter 6, we read that he liked John the Baptist, but that didn't stop him cutting his head off. It didn't stop him executing John the Baptist. I mean, that shows a lot of what he was like as a person. He could like you, but he would still execute you. It's just, they're very, very strange people, the Herods. And we also get a mention of him, obviously, at the trial of Jesus. Can we turn to Luke chapter 23, please? Luke 23, verses 7 to 11. We'll go from 6, actually, verse 6. When Pilate heard of Galilee, he asked whether the man were a Galilean, and as soon as he knew that Jesus belonged to Herod's jurisdiction, he sent him to Herod, who himself was at Jerusalem at the time. And when Herod saw Jesus, he was exceeding glad, for he was desirous to see him of a long season, because he had heard many things of him, and he hoped to have seen some miracle done by him. Then he questioned him in many words, but he answered him nothing, and the chief priests and scribes stood and vehemently accused him. And Herod with his men of war set him at naught, and mocked him, and arrayed him in a gorgeous robe, and sent him again to Pilate. So Herod had wanted to meet Jesus for quite a while. He'd heard of him, obviously, in earlier on in Matthew chapter 14, and he thought that he was John the Baptist. And obviously, if you were Herod and you just executed John the Baptist, and then you hear of this person doing all these many miracles, and you start to think it's John the Baptist, you're going to want to meet him. And Herod gets the opportunity to meet him in Jerusalem at the time of the feast, and He wants to speak to him, and he wants to see a miracle done by Jesus. But Jesus doesn't want to talk to him, though. I mean, we must remember that Jesus was stood in front of the man that had killed his cousin. So I don't think you would want to speak to him either. So note this, verse 11. And Herod, with his men of war, set him at naught and mocked him and arrayed him. So it wasn't just the soldiers that were torturing Jesus. Herod was taking part as well. Which, you know, again, tells us what kind of a person this man was. We don't really know very much about this Herod after this point. History tells us that, again, he fell out of favour with the Roman emperor at the time, Caligula, and he was sent into exile with his wife. I know there's another Herod. There's another Herod mentioned in Acts, but I haven't really covered him because, again, he didn't actually meet Jesus. But it's interesting, if you look into it, that he was exactly the same as the other Herods before him. He executes one of the disciples. He puts another one in jail. He claims to himself to be a god. And at that point, God kills him. So they're all very similar people to each other. They were all very horrible people. There's a lot more we could have gone into, but really, really quite gruesome reading, and I didn't really want to go into it that much, partly because it wasn't very nice. So I was trying to work out what if there were any lessons which we can take from these men. Personal lessons. I thought that was quite a difficult one because they weren't very nice people, and you know we shouldn't even want to think about doing the kind of things that they did. But they are included in Scripture, and there's a reason for that, and I think it's that they had obviously an influence on Jesus's life, and God used Herod the Great at the birth, or sort of like in the young childhood of Jesus, to fulfill prophecy. Can we turn to Matthew chapter 2, please? And if we look at verse 15 of Matthew chapter 2, and Joseph had taken the family down to Egypt, and verse 15 tells us this, and they were there until the death of Herod, that it might be fulfilled that which was spoken of the Lord by the prophet, saying, out of Egypt have I called my son. Now that is taken from Hosea 11 verse 1. Basically, we don't need to turn there, it's basically just lifted straight out of Hosea. But it was a fulfillment of a prophecy that Jesus, that God would call his son Jesus out of Egypt. So Herod the Great influenced this prophecy. And again, we've looked at Herod the Tetrarch, Herod Antipas, was influential at the end of Jesus' life. And I was trying to work out why they're included, and I think we have to remember that God puts people in power whom he chooses, the basest of men, to fulfill his will. So I'm finished. Thank you very much. I hope that was interesting. I know it was a bit of a whistle-stop tour, but there was quite a lot of information to get through, so I hope you're able to take something from that. Thank you.